Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
think Lucia there. I gotta hang up, John. I messed things up here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, folks, we're going to be on the call here in just a moment.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedy Is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various offensive litigating strategies. This is with our speaker, Mr. David Merlin. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy Is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy Is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless. And it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedy Is in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes all of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known purely for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedy Is in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time time you visit the homepage of yourremedyisinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you'll get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points? What are you interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of that if it affects your personal rights in one way or another, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together. Much of that you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. And maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do where I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to a point where you've educated to yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're on the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to Your Remedies in the Law and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to Your Remedies in the Law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. Every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedom's Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make, if your remedy is in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that, honestly, most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. And we make those introductions. Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best. And believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen. And when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have had to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call the limit and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Yeah.
All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. So without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn the call over at this time to our speaker for this evening.
Almost. GW will be here very shortly.
Let me get it to Mr. Edwards, and he will introduce our speaker. Forget that.
There we go. Thank
you so much, Martin. I appreciate that. This evening's speaker is GW, and as you all well know, GW focuses on correcting your status. Everyone I have yet to have somebody get that little smile on their face and give me the correct answer. Everyone, when you ask them if they are or how many classes of citizenship there are in the United States, they'll say there's just one. And then I'll ask them, are you a United States citizen? They go, of course. Never realizing that they're confessing that that point, were that a judicial hearing, to being a franchise and property of the United States. Remember, Lincoln fought a war, a civil war, to do what? To preserve what? The Union. There are Union State citizens, and there are United States citizens. Now, Union State citizens, that phrase, used to appear on forms that the Internal Revenue Service offered one. That was a W-8 then that I saw. I'm sure it's elsewhere, but no longer. However, in the United States Code, at Title 8, Section 1502, you'll find the reference to an American national. I encourage you, use your search engine type in United States Code, Title 8, Section 1502, and you will see the reference to an American national. So, why is this important? President Madison, one of our founding fathers, said in Federalist Paper number 39, where he was addressing Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution that had just been written, quote, its jurisdiction extends to certain enumerated objects only and leaves the several states a residuary and inviolable sovereignty over all other objects, end quote. Wow. So it's very clear that Madison was talking about the created giving limited jurisdiction and its creator having inviolable sovereignty over all other subjects, the states, the Union states. Just 85 years later, right after the Civil War, you know, everybody thinks the Civil War is about freeing the slaves and so forth. No, had nothing to do. That was the poster child. That was the theater. That was the optics. What it was about was flipping the outline to take the Almighty One, which created man, taking man that created the states, creating the several states that created the Union, and inverting it. That's what it was about. Just 85 years later, in U.S. versus Anthony, 24 Fed 829, 1873, quote, the term resident and citizen of the United States is distinguished, meaning different from, a citizen of one of the several states, in that the former is a special class of citizen created by Congress. It's creation. Though it wasn't created by the Almighty One. It was created by the Congress. Remember, the Creator is always greater than its creation. So there's a special class of creature created by the Congress. It's their property. It has to do what they tell it to do, and that was just after the Civil War. They couldn't get away with it before the Civil War. So if Congress, in its grotesque wisdom, decides that it wants to vaccinate everything, everyone, it can do it. If it wants to cull the herd, it can do that. No different than a cattle rancher can vaccinate his cattle. A cattle rancher can cull its herd. A horse rancher can vaccinate against equine encephalitis, whatever. It owns United States citizens. Scott SCOTUS, Supreme Court of the United States. Justice John Marshall Harlan. The year was 1901. He actually predicted what was going to happen today. In part, he said, the idea prevails with some. Indeed, it has found expression in arguments at the bar that we have in this country, substantially two national governments, one to be maintained under the Constitution with all of its restrictions, the other to be maintained by the Congress outside and independently of that instrument, and here's the kicker, by exercising such powers as other nations of the earth are accustomed to, end quote. Well, it continues to quote, but stop in there. What we're seeing today playing out politically is the end game for all of this. How many millions, maybe billions, of people have been killed or will be dying soon, within a year, 5 years, 10 years at the most, because they have graphene assembling itself within your body that's been vaccinated? And what's going to happen when they crank up the power on a 5G antenna that someone with this graphene in their body, which is going to respond very excitedly, what's going to happen when that graphene in the brain or in the heart is exercised like that, excited like that. All right. So when we talk about American exceptionalism, what we're talking about is one half of this government, these two governments. The government that is maintained under the Constitution with all its restrictions is the government that no other government, no other people in the world enjoy other than us. Now, many, you know, I've shared this with several people. I mean, everybody. My wife rolls her eyes when somebody asks me a question because she knows I'm going to get on my soapbox. But the question is people roll their eyes when I tell them that they don't need a driver's license. They don't need a marriage license. They don't need any kind of licensure. They don't need a Social Security number. That's only for that group of people. Remember, some IRS commissioner says that the income tax is voluntary. It's voluntary until you get a Social Security number. You got to undo that, which is something that Bernie offers with regards to strategic withdrawal. But in the meantime, until the finances can come up for that, we have this thing tonight that we're talking about as far as correcting your status, taking you from being a United States citizen into being a Union State citizen, better known appropriately within the United States Code as an American national. So those are the things that I wanted to cover with you tonight, and I'm very pleased to turn this call now over to our speaker this evening, G.W.
Hello, everyone. Hope everyone's having a hope everyone's having a good. I guess it was George Washington's original birthday, wasn't it? And then they changed it to President's Day. I think that was
they ripped everything off.
Yeah, I think that was the original. Original was, remember, George Washington's birthday, and then had to be more politically correct, and it's called President's.
Hey, that's another GW.
Yeah, right.
Right. Happy birthday, GW.
Yeah, So I thought I'd speak a little bit about the temptation when you're going after, you know, getting out there and I know that you'll like me talking about this, Michael, but when you're getting out there going after information on correcting your status, a lot of people run into a lot of different things. They run into all kinds of different websites, and the same ones keep on popping up all the time. And even the one that is that Copper Moonshine Stills pops up. And of course, I read it many years ago, and it's been there for a long time. And there's a bunch of good information, but there's a lot of just misleading information on it too. One of the things is they always tell you that never put an affidavit with your application for passport. Like they'll say, they'll immediately, dismiss it. Blah 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 blah. Anyway, we had the other day we had a gentleman that we were on, Michael, myself, and John were on with, and this gentleman happened to make a little bit of a blunder because he actually followed the Copper Moonshine Stills process in trying to procure a passport, and it backfired and he got denied. And the unfortunate thing is that a lot of those actions have consequences. One of those consequences, if you move forward with somebody else's process that where you get denied, is that you cannot reapply for a passport at least for a minimum of a year. And from what some somebody told us, me and Michael, that, you know, the State Department is really enforcing these things, really kind of clamping down to give those $10,000, fees, okay, and to hand them out. And so I wanted to make sure I kind of covered that in case you're out there surfing the internet, looking at different processes, and I just wanted people to understand that, you know, they're when they lead you and you screw up, it kind of it's not on them, it's on you now, and the fines can be a little heavy, and so hopefully nobody else on this call is doing that at this time. You know, another thing.
Well,
go ahead.
It's important for the students to understand there are many places out there that are offering, we'll show you how to correct your status, $250 or some $150, whatever it is. You get what you pay for, and the price that you pay is heavy. I'd like for you, if you would, and I don't want to steer you away from what you intended to talk about this evening, but I wanted to. In fact, we have a new call, first-time caller here. If I may, I'd like to, from Davenport, that's what I'm showing here, I'd ask this first-time caller how you heard about us, if you would, please.
Just a second.
Yeah, I hear you coming across loud and clear. You were.
Yep.
You're breaking up, or are you on a headset or something? Or
no, let me turn the speakerphone off.
No, you're good now. You're good now. So whatever you're doing, stay there. So how'd you hear about us?
Mark Boyle went to a friend of mine when I guess you emailed him back, and he forwarded an email, and I emailed you. I said I wanted to listen in, and you said okay.
Oh, terrific. Sure. Welcome. What is your first name, please?
John. I'm a senior citizen, so I've been around the world, learned quite a bit. When it comes time to ask a question, what do I have to do to mute and unmute?
Press star 2 on your keypad. Star 2. When you press star 2, your hand will pop up on a board that I'm looking at, and then our host tonight, Martin, will unmute you and invite you to speak. Okay?
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Anyways, GW, this is a first-time caller. I was watching an email thread that they had developed. I invited them to come on the call tonight. Could you please share some of the horrors? You just shared one about this fellow. Now it's going to have to wait a year because he went through a certain process. What are some other horror stories, and to whose service provider is it accountable to, please?
Okay, well, there's been a lot of action with, and I've gotten a lot of people that have come to me after they have gone through the information from, for instance, Onavon Rights. And another name out there, David Strait. And so those two have garnered a lot of attention and have been doing seminars all over the place. Just give you one example that's very strange when you take the behavior of especially the woman Onavon Rights. She came in and attended a conference that a friend of mine, a friend of ours, that does, he's kind of like a constitutional lawyer. He's an older gentleman, and he actually had done the same process that we use here, and that Michael uses with everybody, that I use with everybody. And it took him a long time to get there. He's an attorney, and he's quite stubborn. And finally, after it took his friends about 7 years to get him to the point where he actually looked at it and then found out, oh, my gosh, after studying Supreme Court cases and whatnot, somebody's doing something with their mic that's pretty loud. I don't know who that is in the background there, but you might want to mute out so that – hello?
I'll do that. I did not unmute, John. I forgot to. You're good now.
Okay. Okay. All right. So this woman came into one of his conferences that he was giving, and I've told the stories before, so I'll tell it really fast. But she he had never met her before, but he'd seen her picture many, many times. And when he saw her come into the back of the room, he realized he knew her, but he couldn't put anywhere. And she only stood there for about 5 minutes, and then she went back out of the room. Well, after the break, he went out to the table that was selling all of his books, tapes, and materials, and the person that was manning the table told him that, a lady walked up and she bought everything. she just bought everything that was available. And so he asked her, of course, you know, well, who was it? And then they found out it was Anna von Reitz. And so why would somebody do that? Why would somebody buy all the books, tapes, and materials? That's a real sneaky thing to do when you think about it, because I know she doesn't use his process, that's for sure, in doing what she's doing. And on top of that, it's a way to kind of stifle, you know, what's going on with the people that are there to learn and then to, be able to buy books and tapes and materials that are going to be, you know, read and used. Very much, in my opinion, doubtful that any of those materials were used for anything other than put into a can somewhere. But going further, I've had numerous conversations with people, seen the documents, they send it to me over and over again. I'm tired of looking at them. And one day, and this was probably about 6 months ago, 8 months ago now, one of her students was stopped in a traffic stop in California. And one of the things that she does with her group is they promote these, it sounds really good, these constitutional caucuses or constitutional assemblies. That's right. It's a constitutional assembly. We're going to be able to educate people, put them together. They're going to learn how to, you know, hold the people's grand juries and things like that. But another thing she does with these constitutional assemblies that she has over a number of states is she actually will issue you a card, a travel card. And this card is issued by her, okay? And it has your picture on it. It has all these things that, you know, talk about as, you know, constitutional travel and all this stuff. It's a real good thought, but the gentleman that handed that to the cop was immediately arrested and then his car was impounded. And, of course, they made an example out of him, okay, which is not really good for the movement. Take that and you counter that with what we're doing here, okay, we're helping you to understand how to correct your status and standing with the numero uno, agency in the country, which is in Washington, D.C., which is called the, you know, U.S. State Department, which is the one that's recognized by every cop out there, every judge, all the people and the places that you need to interface with in some kind of a dire situation like that, these are the people that when you hand them a card, I could state this pretty much categorically, better not be an Anavon Rights card. Because when they try to run that, what is that going to link up to? When we go through this process with you and you end up getting your passport and passport card, and let's say you were stopped in a traffic stop, when they run that card, which they can do, by the way, because that interfaces with their all of their equipment, okay, they can run it in what's called pass card mode. It states what the State Department says about you and now your corrected status, which is a much, much better outcome to have than, handing somebody some card that was made at, however, okay, and that they can't run with any official government institution. And so that should be pretty black and white right there, just that explanation. Because if you're trying to achieve and get remedy and be in a place where you're categorized as when they run that card and it says do not stop or do not detain, do not arrest, do not search, that's a much better place to be than running some card that has been issued by this lady. And so anyway, that's just a couple of those kind of little horror stories. There's many, many, many more. I also wanted to sort of talk a little bit about some conversations that I was having today with I got a client that is from Moscow. Already took his friend through the whole process, and he's got everything and doing very well. And he referred his friend and compadre over there that he's been working with and working around. They have kind of a group over there, and kind of interesting. And talking to a guy in Moscow that's he was born in Ukraine, came to America in the 80s. Went through the naturalization process, and then got a little fed up with America. So now he's been mostly doing his thing over in Europe and in Moscow and a little bit in Israel. And so he's a naturalized U.S. citizen, which also the other gentleman is under the same auspices and has corrected his status successfully. So we were talking, and it's kind of funny because people ask, they tend to ask the same questions. You get the same questions over and over. And as soon as they wake up through the conversation after a little while, they ask a question. They say, well, why isn't everybody doing this? Well, I mean, if this is right, I mean, why isn't everybody doing this? It's like, duh. How much did you know about this before your friend just told you a little bit about, correcting your status? Like, I didn't know anything. It's like, yeah, you're a worldwide entrepreneur. You have businesses and trading firms, okay, in multiple countries. You're evidently very highly educated, okay, and you had no clue, okay. And so this is what's interesting is that, and when I say this, I'm not trying to be tongue-in-cheek about it, and I'm not trying to joke around. The Rockefellers in our country, okay, these weren't people with the best of intentions, okay? They funded, all right, the Board of Education back in 1902. It was somewhere right around $4 billion. Back in 1902, that was a lot of money. And old man Rockefeller said, I don't care about having highly educated academians. I care about having highly trained workers. Okay? And that's exactly what they've gotten. They've gotten out of the school systems, they've gotten highly trained W-2 workers, okay, that are mostly positioned to be a great worker for all the different firms and all the different, you know, places they can work for. And when they say, you know, you got to be taxed and you got to give this and you got to do that, it's like, you know, they salute, okay? That's the reality. But it's not just with education. I mean, they took over the medical system right about that time. That's when the Rockefellers bought the Merck, okay, which was one of the first company, first medical pharmaceutical companies that they bought, was about the year 1900. And things changed after that. They also took over science. They took over the Bar Association. They took over a lot of parts of government. One of the first places that they actually went after, which was not even the Treasury, they went after the State Department way back when. Okay, the very first big administration they really wanted to really get their teeth into. Here is the good news. You know, that was the bad news. Here is the good news. And I love this part right here. Our Father in heaven, which, you know, the leaders, you know, on this call, and then Michael and John, and I don't think there's a service provider out there that doesn't have a rich faith in their Father, who created them and who gave them the canon of Scripture, okay, the Word of God, literally, okay, and the instructions in that Word. And in Hosea, it's written that he says, it's God speaking, and he's saying, my people are perishing or are being destroyed for lack of knowledge. And it's not a lack of going to a Rockefeller school or getting a Rockefeller certificate, diploma, or getting a baptismal certificate or anything like that. It's actually knowledge. It's comprehension of a, you know, subject matter. And that's what we, as researchers and truth seekers are doing. We're finding the different, you know, ways to remedy these things. Now, the other part of that is that it is the enemy that's allowed to tempt us. Okay, and by the way, it says God doesn't, it cannot be tempted, and neither does he tempt. Okay, now God tests us, but he doesn't tempt us. But there's another verse that talks about how we are, when we are tempted, we're never tempted beyond what we can handle. And here's what's interesting, and I love this, man, because this really always is, it's a kind of a life verse for me. But with the temptation, God provides a way of escape. And so here's what's interesting. Even though it's the enemy tempting us with, okay, sign up for this privilege, benefit, you know, Social Security number, whatever it is. Okay. And we get these temptations from the enemy to acquiesce into their system. God, it says, provides the way of escape. So they have to build it into their plan. They don't even have an option, the enemy. They have to, because it's one of those immutable laws that can't be messed with. So they're always forecasting, just like, you know, what happened in Ohio with this big spill, okay, that they burned it off and it was, you know, hydrochloric acid went into the clouds and is now killing off all these things over in the Palestine, Ohio. They telegraphed that a year beforehand with a movie. Okay. I forget what the movie's called, but it was actually they used people from the Palestine areas extras in that movie. And it was all about a train wreck and all about chemicals and poisoning. And they telegraph everything, which is very interesting. But not only do they telegraph, they have to put the escape clauses right within their code. And so we find those things. Now, the unfortunate part, and this is what most people are asking constantly, is, well, why isn't everybody doing this? Why didn't my lawyer tell me about this? the lawyers, your attorneys, I mean, good people, okay? A lot of good people are attorneys. A lot of them have great hearts, want to see justice. They're completely taught in a captured operation, which is called a Rockefeller Law School, funded by the Rockefellers, created by the Rockefellers. So they never learn about these things that we're talking about. They don't talk about the things that Bernie talks about on Saturday night. They don't talk about the things that Herr Schlaven talks about on Wednesday night, okay? And they don't talk about the things that I talk about here on Monday. And neither do they talk about the things that John educates people on Tuesday night, because they want to keep you on the farm. They want to keep you, and they need their slave masters, the ones that they have out there on the plantation, is the, you know, ones that are the go-tos, the ones that wear the white robes and wear the suits, the attorneys and whatnot. Their programs in such a way that they're never given this information. They never study this material. They only do it. They only get it by osmosis or going out and studying it themselves. And then on top of that, the system is so complete, even with doctors, as you probably have all noticed this over the past 2 to 3 years now, even when they find a remedy as an attorney or as a doctor, if they employ that with their clientele, I mean, they could be in big, big trouble. Not only big trouble, they can be eliminated. And so they're in a bad spot trying to do this, whereas we aren't. You know, we can do these things, and there's little, if any, repercussion for us. And correcting our status, you know, using alternative type of remedies for our health, and so on and so forth. So with that said, I think what we probably should do, Michael, is open up the phone lines for questions and answers.
Well, before we turn this over to Martin, one thing to add to your comments, and then I had a question come in by way of to me, the easiest way, and I'm going to ask that question as well. But what I want to add, and this is so critically important, especially if you're new to us for the work that we do here, is that my focus has been in developing a team. Not just promoting one fellow, one lady, but promoting a team to provide a holistic, for writing a term from Health Matters, a holistic approach, a global approach to whatever the issue is that you're dealing with. So in this case here, GWs, we're talking about correcting your status. On the Saturday call with Justice Beshear, we're talking about using trusts to insulate and isolate a trust, a religious trust that is a non-taxable, non-record-keeping trust by the IRS's definition. Okay, and these things have been going on with the work that Justice Beshear has done for nearly 30 years without any controversy. You operate your personal life through a religious corporation. Again, something that's been done for many people, thousands of people over the near 30 years, conflict at all whatsoever. So there's that, and then there's the Tuesday night call with John. John is one of a few people that we have who went to law school, graduated law school, took the bar exam, passed the bar exam, and then when invited to become a member of that state bar, said thank you, but no thank you. And they took that education as a starting point in their long career. to learn all that they can about the Constitution and how it applies. So these people are no stranger to the concept of two national governments operating at the same time, if you're at the beginning of this call. And they're basically 100% successful, if they're brought in early enough, in order to maneuver and place into the courts through the teachings that they share with their students, the students, briefs and so forth, and motions, that they walk away unscathed. Yes, it's a nerve-wracking thing, but, you know, for instance, maybe two months ago, you remember that 63-year-old gentleman, aches and pains in his body. He believes that CBD oil gives him peace. His body takes out the inflammation. So he takes these gummy bears with CBD and THC compounds in them. They're over the counter in California, and that's where he was traveling through at the time, and he picked up a case, didn't think anything about it, was coming back home, traveling through, I think it was Arizona, possibly, and was pulled over for a taillight. And when the officers saw the gunners, they charged him with drug trafficking. Drug trafficking. Because that's what meth, they believe, the criteria in Arizona for drug trafficking. The old guy trying to get rid of his aches and pains, chewing on a gummy bear. Anyways, the long and the short of it is that after maybe 3 months of educating the student, and the student going through the litigation, all charges were dropped. And even more importantly, the $5,000 bond was returned. They don't give bond money back. Nobody does. And yet there they did. So we know that that's very powerful. We've had three students here who have corrected their status. They've misbehaved knowingly, willingly, and intentionally. And all three times their cases have been dropped. Just dropped. Dismissed. Go away. And that's because they've corrected their status. So I want you to understand that tonight's promotion, if you would, it's about GW. It's about correcting your status, definitely. But it's also for you to understand that there's an entire team there that is at your disposal to right wrongs. And now the question that came in to me by way of text. Can you have GW delve into the pros and cons of David Lester Strait? Okay.
Well, I don't know the man.
We've covered this before. Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know the man personally, I've never spoken to him. Probably wouldn't want to at this point. It wouldn't even be something that I would be even remotely interested in. There are YouTube channels that are actually I know of I think two. One that I've listened to a lot of information on. There's actually YouTube channels dedicated to people that have gone through his process, know him, and are exposing him and trying to help people out. And, I mean, there's a ton of content on there. I mean, I don't have the time to really go through a lot of that stuff because I like to stay busy with people that have real problems that I can help resolve.
Positive things. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What I can tell you is that I have people asking me on a regular basis, you know, is this guy a plant? You know, because they get so confused by he's got what seems like a lot of good information. But what I find in how he goes about things, okay, and how he does is he does mostly seminars and at a lot of churches, mostly in Utah, because he's LDS. His he conflates a lot of different issues that really wow the audience. Okay, if you've never studied about the straw man before, okay, and by the way, there's a lot to it, and it's true. The straw man, you know, your all caps name compared to your lowercase, you know, upper and lowercase name, which recognizes the real man, okay. If you've never delved into and understand the Sophisticated trust and the birth certificate, the bonds that are created, you know, from the birth certificates and traded on Wall Street, you know, through Fidelity and all this kind of stuff. It really is captivating. But the thing is that he throws out a lot of this different information, which is actually relevant, okay? But when I get somebody that's talking about those issues, and they bring up, and they've come to me to understand the correction process, it's like, listen, I'll be happy to talk with you at more length about some of those other things after you get a real foundation, okay, for correcting your status and going through and understanding that, because there's a lot really to understand. In reality, there's not a lot to actually help you to get through it. There's a lot more to understand just on that topic alone. But they throw all these other topics in there, and you have these people that are just wowed by all this information, and they want to go to all the different seminars, and they want to order all the different, you know, they have a whole host of things that you can order. And, I've been on the website where they actually, promote doing the 1099 OID process, okay? And I can speak to that quite on a crazy level if you really wanted to know a lot about the 1099 OID process. But I'll tell you one thing. It's super dangerous for the average person to even try it, let alone completed it and gotten huge amounts of money back from the Treasury. It's kind of getting close to the third rail. And, you know, we're, you know, if everybody's familiar, a lot of us old folks, you know, people from New York, Chicago, and the area, you know about the third rail. When it comes to trains, man, you never want to step on that rail. You're toast fast. It's what powers it up. What I'm saying is the 1099 OID process is dangerous. I wouldn't tell anybody to do it or to even try it. That's what the Justice Department came after me for, by the way. And also the Treasury. But what are they plants? Could this be a government, you know, operation to keep people going through their system? I don't know. It could be. I'm not saying it is, but my opinion, it possibly could be. But there's just a whole lot of misinformation there with the good information. And then we can cover this on this call also, you know, just to kind of cover it. There's also when you're doing and you're investigating and you're going on Google or you're doing whatever, and finding out a lot about either correcting your status, you'll run into videos that are from Russell J. Gould and also Plenipotentiary Judge David Wood Miller that are out there and that are very interesting and seem like maybe it's a remedy. And I'm not saying it's not, and this is about, you know, correct parts say syntax grammar. I said it for quite a while, decades ago. and I had a relationship with David Wynn Miller, and he's the one that handed me over to Russell J. Gould, who's still alive and still doing a lot. The problem, here's the problem. Russell's incredibly adept mathematically, and he flows at a very, very high intellectual level and can speak and write in correct parse syntax grammar like nobody else. And that's how he teaches people to do their court cases and to do their claim of the life and, okay, a number of different things. If you ask Russell, and I have close friends that live very close to him, by the way, and have dinner with him still regularly. And when you ask him about the IRS, he just says, you know, that's something you don't want to mess with. And, you know, you just want to, I mean, he comes up shy on that. Now, if you speak to myself, you speak to Michael, you know, or you speak to Brother John, who has a lot of wins in that area, by the way, helping people to deal with extreme situations, which is really his bailiwick. You know, I mean, it's about really helping people when they're in dire straits. It's a totally different, it's a totally different game. And the reason I say that is because to prevail with correct parse syntax grammar in a court case, you better be like Russell in your ability to deliver, okay, and stand your ground and understand what you're doing, which I think is, just my personal opinion, it's extremely difficult. And that's why I love the simpler route. And it's not that it's simple, but it's a lot easier for a judge, a prosecutor, a DA to understand just plain English than it is to read correct parse syntax grammar, which is a mathematical equation frontwards and backwards. Okay, so that I'll just stop with that because I know I get into the woods with it. But yeah. There are a lot of different things out there you can investigate and you can try to do. It's, you know, you just want to be kind of careful.
Right. The other thing that I'd like to say is that I'd say at 16 years of age, I went to work for Zales Jewelers. At 24, I opened up my own store and was very successful being a manufacturing wholesale retail. I would have people come in, never seen before, reaching out with my advertising, never saw them before, and they would say, do you know what Ronnie said about you? That was a competitor. And I said, no, but you really don't need to share with me. And then I'd smile. How may I help you today? And they'd say, well, then come back and say, well, how can you be like that? And I said, because Ronnie gives me some of my best customers that I've never seen before like you. Point being is that we don't like to talk about other people in a negative sense from a position of an evil tongue, if you would. But it is important to forewarn someone before they step into a snake pit, right? So that's I want you to understand this is where these comments are coming from. And again, understand that we take a team approach to whatever it is issue that you're dealing with. So, Martin, let me turn the call over to you now to take care of your hosting work, and we'll go from there.
All right, very good. Star 2 on your keypad, folks. If you have a question, star 2 to raise your hand. I'll only need you one at a time. If you're on the Freedoms Radio side, type your question in the question bar there, and do not forget, please, to click submit. First up, we've got Kent in West Virginia. Go ahead, Kent.
Yes. Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening.
Good evening, Kent.
Okay. So, Greg, I want to ask you a question, if I might. Mike was just talking about the history of different people who were, you know, working on different situations, trying to change some of the dire situations that we're in today. And the other day on a call, he was talking about the history of the various information providers. And a conversation ensued regarding the amount of experience they have and how long they've been doing something. And could you clarify for us, because I've noticed over the course of time, you know, you've given us a date of 2014, but then said back in the early 2000s you were working on this. Could you just kind of clarify the process or, you know, the two or three delineations that you went through and when you actually started this and then, you know, when you felt that you had it finalized, whether that be from the 1990s to 2014 or whatever?
Sure, sure. So,
thank you.
I kind of woke up back in really to what was going on with the whole thing that I talk about, the Rockefeller schools and everything. Back in 1979 was, I believe, that was really the year, and exited that system. I didn't really start to I started gaining ground in the early 1980s, and then in 1984 I started my contracting business and declared myself an Article 1 Section 10 contractor, and so that brought on a little bit of heat, and but I wanna every time I was approached or they tried to, you know, wrangle me in, so to speak, and try to get, you know, you need a license, blah, blah, blah. I was like, what? Do you understand Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution? So, and it was, I met Brother John in 1996, okay? Probably met Bernie right around the same time because he was at the same, in the same room that we were in. And I was talking back then about some things that were similar, but I didn't have the full scope of under really understanding how to correct your status until approximately 2008. Okay, in 2008, in March of 2008 is when I actually corrected my status and went through the process with both the State Department and also the Treasury, okay? And so that was, you know, my anniversary is coming up here. I think it's March 8th of so it'll be 15 years here next month around the 8th. So, and to be totally transparent, Kent, I didn't really start to really teach and help a lot of people do, you know, in doing this until this puppet regime referred to as the Biden administration came into power. So that really launched a lot of people getting hold of me and saying, hey, you know, the stuff you're talking about, you've talked to me about before, you know, is there anything to it? How do we do it? That kind of a thing. And then, you know, I don't know how long it was after that, but, you know, that Michael and there's others, you know, that I interface with, and you know, it's pretty popular, I would say, but I would say it's popular within the circles still that we travel in or that you're kind of interfacing with, but it's not it's not mainstream by any stretch of the imagination, this topic. It's not mainstream at all. It's, you know, people every day are, you know, they have no idea what you're talking about if you say correct your status. You know,
could you
being in that?
Go ahead.
No, I'm about done. Yeah.
Okay. Could you elaborate on the importance of 2014, which you raised several times, and also tell us when you were hit with those numerous problems with the Treasury Department and the DOJ, et cetera, and how that fell into this and where your level of understanding was?
Okay. So 2014, what about 2014?
I've heard you mention 2014 in the past as a time when you got up and rolling on doing certain things, but I don't quite see how that fits into this picture.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember saying that, but I will tell you this. It was when I was released from jail, okay, after they held me for 5.5 months, and they finally released me in December of 2007. When I got out, and I was put on pretrial services at that time, and having to wait to be go through all the particular round of charges. Okay, there was five charges, and as soon as I got out, I went full bore into understanding in the fine points of correcting your status, and then I finally got it done in March. Okay. So it took me about, you know, 4 months or so to really, you know, getting into it pretty heavy and realizing what I needed to do and executing it. And then shortly after that, I would say probably the next year. Maybe at the end of the year, it might have been, I think it was more like the spring of the next year in 2009, is when they had the little, what do you call it? It was when I was deposed by my partner's counsel at the Arizona AG's office, where they and then they sprung that one crucial question on me that had nothing to do with the charges. They asked me if I had ever filed a 1040 or paid taxes, federal income taxes, and that's when, you know, they gasped, you know, most of the people in the room, at my response, which was, you know, no, never have, and of course, you know, if you don't file, you know, you're not paying any money. And so that's when and then within a week or two after that is when I got called into the IRS to be audited. That was, you know, the first time. And so that was, you know, that was like 2009, and then it was a little later in 2009 that the CID actually came after me. It was a little later. Let's see. CID. No. CID was CID was in 2011. And then the Justice Department was shortly after that. Most likely in the same year, 2011. Yeah.
So it's safe to say that you've been doing this for 15 years, but even after doing the process, as you said, you got busy and did it after being held in the 5.5 months in jail. Even after doing that, you still ran into complications with the CID, the DOJ, et cetera.
Yeah. From previous stuff that I had, well, stuff that I was working on. Actually, I was doing the reason for the IRS audit was because they got me to admit on record that I never filed a 1040.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a total setup. I don't know if you can figure that one out. That was a total setup.
Mm-hmm.
They were hoping, I know that my ex-partner and his attorney thought they had it in the bag. I mean, I'm sure they thought, wow, if we just get him to say this, and we're taking him out.
Don't ask a question you don't know the answer to.
Yeah, well, I knew the answer to it, which was easy. And,
well, I mean,
but they just wanted
them.
Yeah. And so now here's the unfortunate part. You know, what they meant for evil, well, this is fortunate. What they meant for evil, God meant for good, okay? Because I would have never volunteered that information to anybody on a record if I wasn't in that situation. But because I went through it and how I prevailed with it, it gave me not just the kahunas to, you know, to be pretty bold with it, but it also showed me that this process works, okay? And, you know, and then on top of that, in 2020, I saw the IRS on I was Googling around for my ex partner's name, and I found that he had put in a petition to the IRS through the court, and the DOJ came back and denied his request, and he's presently being arrogated and irrigated. Okay, it ain't a pretty picture for him right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I mean I'm not feeling good about that. I'm not like, oh, that's great, you know, you son of a gun. I feel really bad for him. But what it shows me is that, okay, for instance, okay, we'll get onto this subject. If you read the court case into the pleadings of it, I mean, they were cleaning his clock for all the stupidity that he did when we had the corporation sold, and my ex-partner did what we teach people never to do, okay? And Bernie talks about this on calls, and Michael knows this, and so does Brother John, and okay. The one thing is, when you have the charitable religious trust or the corporation soul, that entity is its own entity, okay? And you are, if you're an officer of that corporation soul, which I was the overseer, and actually Ed was the scribe at the time. And so he had access to the account in which he would write himself checks on a regular basis. I mean, he wouldn't go and spend and write out a check to a merchant. He would go and put a check into his bank account, his personal bank account. Could never get him to stop doing it. Okay. And after a while, just kind of like, okay, whatever. You know, you do what you're going to do. Well, so many years later, okay, it's still killing him. It's the stupidest thing you can do is to take a check out of the corporation soul or charitable religious trust account and put it into your own name. Now, he did this so many times, okay, that there was enormous, enormous amount of tax. Okay, Bill, and I mean, there's so many other things I could talk about on this that he did that was so stupid. Okay, and here's the thing: I never did it even one time, ever. Never needed to. I never needed to. Okay, never needed to put anything into an account in my name. Of course, you got to realize something. I haven't had an account in my own name for decades. I mean, we're going back a long, long ways. Okay.
Yeah, listen, I'm going to interrupt you at this moment, and we have a very patient first-time caller here that I'd like to go ahead and answer, have a question answered for them. Aloha, Joe in Hawaii. How are you doing? Joe? Hello, Joe. There you are.
Yeah.
Helps to unmute the phone, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. I need information to how to get in touch with you guys.
Sure. I've got your phone number here. I can the phone number ending in 9653. Do you take texts on that number?
Yes.
All right. I'll just text you. In fact, you're 6 hours behind me. When this call is over, I'm just going to hang up and give you a call back, okay, in a few minutes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. I want to thank everyone for joining us this evening. I want to remind you to return tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, we'll be enjoying Brother John, who is the point of the spear for all the litigation that the team cooperates with and works through. Again, same phone number, same pin, same time. We'll have a different speaker and a different topic. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.